You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
And you come and save her. Better believe it, get on her knees and pray her. Then pray her and never look back. Once the world forgave you, then do right, then do good. And it's so hard to do right when you do wrong, when I turn right, but you turn all the way.
Hensha, and welcome. We're glad you're here for a conversation with Dawn Karima. Energetic, exciting, entertaining, and informative.
Welcome to our show. Oh, I'm so happy you're here, and I'm happy I'm here. And I'm, abundantly happy that our guest is here today, because he is going to host this show for us. My name is Dr. Dawn Karima, and I'm today's guest. Yep, you heard that right. I'm the guest today. And our guest host who will be interviewing me is our beloved Dwayne Brayboy. Welcome to our show today.
Thank you for having me here.
Well, it's all yours for now.
Okay. So, since last time, something I thought about asking you was, could you tell us about the cover art of Mother of Nations? Now, I've seen the original photo. I was really glad to see that this was turned into art that was used as your cover art for your book, but I figured that I would ask you about that so that everyone else can hear.
Wonderful. Well, we are celebrating the fact that I have a brand new book out, and it's called Mother of Nations, and it's poems by Dawn Karima. You can find it on Amazon.com or order directly from the publisher at www.utteredchaos.org. So that's utteredchaos.org or amazon.com, and the name of the book is Mother of Nations. And that completely explains the cover art. Keith Jim is a Navajo artist who is so talented and also generous of heart. And he drew this fantastic portrait for me, and it is so beautiful. It depicts me, but it also depicts two wonderful indigenous boys. And at the time when we were putting this book together and I was expecting my son, obviously we didn't have pictures of him other than an ultrasound. But also we wanted to convey the idea of motherhood and indigenous generations and all of that. And so Keith chose a photograph of me, and he was willing to create art from it. I mean, painstakingly draw. And he's so patient. He works on his art for a long time before it's actually finished and colors it. And it's all hand-colored and all of that. And I would love to see Keith Jim, Navajo Nation. He's on Facebook. So I would love to see his art just blow up because he has such a unique talent. But also, he was willing to do this for us as a gift. And I was so moved by that he did this cover just as a present, a baby present. And I love that he did that because it shows his generous heart and nature. And, you know, in our culture, art is everything. We don't even have a separate word for art in most of our indigenous languages. You know, it's just another way that we express our spirituality.
That is a wonderful thing to say, and I agree with you. And it's a beautiful photo. It is. Well, the original photo was great. I remember when that was first taken. That was a very powerful photo. But then whenever I saw this art, it had been turned into art. Somebody had painted this. I just thought, wow, this is beautiful. Just
yeah.
Beautiful.
Yes. I'm very grateful.
Yes,
that, Keith.
Oh, I'm absolutely sure. It's very flattering to have friends like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm. I'm grateful.
Very, very nice. Yeah. So, Mother of Nations,
mm-hmm.
How do you use social media as an author? Do you feel the internet and social media contribute to the well-being of poetry?
What a wonderful question. I like to think that Tecumseh would have used a cell phone. I like to think that some of our great leaders, can you imagine what Crazy Horse would have been able to do with the internet?
I agree.
You know, we are the Mayans, the Aztecs. I mean, imagine. We had technology. You know, I think there's a prevailing myth that Native people were just sort of wandering around in the woods or on the plains. But we had
yes.
technology. You know, the wonderful tattoos that our Polynesian brothers and sisters have were actually, if you held them up to the moon, they were maps. They were cartography. And so I just see social media as an extension of what we already do. We had the tribes on the plains had winter counts that kept track of elaborate historical events and information. We had all kinds of ability to use the stars to predict and to grow crops and to travel. And so even though social media has its, oh my goodness, has its sort of insane side, I think that it's something that we can take as Indigenous people, as artists, as writers, as poets, as musicians, and we can use it for our gain. Everything has a shadow side. But social media has the ability in seconds to connect communities. One of the interesting things about Native America is that we are almost always early adopters of technology, too. Because we have to be, because of geography and distance. So Cherokee had cable. I mean, Cherokee cable was the only way to watch TV for many, many years. The internet, immediately, Native people were like, yes, let's get on this internet. And we started seeing networking, and we started seeing apps, and we started seeing Facebook groups and Instagram posts and all of these things. Because social media connected us in ways that the distance between all of our nations and tribes, you know, you used to have to drive for a few days to get to the Gathering of Nations and see everybody. Now you just have to click and share.
Right.
So I think that
right.
social media actually has revitalized poetry in many ways. Because for so long, poetry in Western culture was relegated to libraries and academia. And poetry
right.
readings that were in lofty places. And now these kids are getting on TikTok and sharing their, saying their poem, performing their poem. And it's there for millions of people to see suddenly. You know, it's you write a poem and you can immediately post it. We both write for Whisper and Thunder magazine. Well, back in the day, people had to pay to subscribe to a magazine and it had to be mailed to their house and they had to go to the post office box and pick it up. But now they can just go online and see what Native people are doing in all kinds of places where Indigenous people are. So I love social media in its best and highest good. Of course, I'm concerned about the shadow side. But I think for poetry, the idea that you can write a poem about something that's happening right now, a current event, and put it up and people can read it that very day while it's still relevant and brings people back to poetry. And so I do think social media has a place for art, for poetry, but most of all for connecting Indigenous communities.
Yes, I agree. I agree. And I believe that it does expose an author's poetry to a wider audience even.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that natives that were naturally just curious people,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I do believe that we, you know, that Crazy Horse would have owned a cell phone.
Oh yeah.
You know, and used it and all.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me about a book that I read years ago called Everything You Know About Indians Is Wrong.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know that book.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what this reminds me of, you know, because I think that people get this stereotype, a Hollywood stereotype of what it means to be an Indian, they apply that to like a blanket application to all natives.
Yes.
And we know that that's wrong. You know, that's very skewed, that Hollywood image of what it means to be Native. I think that we're very curious people, and that's why I think so many Natives use the internet and such. You know, yeah, click and you're there.
Well, back in the day, they used to call it Indian TV, where people would just sit on their porch or look out their window and just see what was going on. And social media allows us to do that. We have windows into lives. We have connections with people. There are marriages being made on social media because people are indigenous people are spread so far apart that people are actually connecting and making all kinds of relationships and friendships all over the world. And I think Philip DeLoria has a book called Indians in Unexpected Places. And he talks about the fact that people are shocked to know that Geronimo owned a car.
Geronimo's like, Cadillac.
Yeah, they just melt down. Like, you know what? No.
Yes.
You know? And I think that that is a part what we can do with poetry, with music, with writing of all kinds, is that we can continually center ourselves in the traditional and the modernity simultaneously.
I agree. That's a great thought, and it's a very valid thought, because we know that that's true in our hearts as Native people. Yeah. So do you think that there are any traits that an Indigenous author must have, you know, to be successful in the modern age, you know, or to write an effective book people can relate to? You know, would you say that there's any specific sorts of traits that Indigenous authors should have?
We had this conversation so often as I taught at the university level for most of my career. You know, what is Indigenous writing and what is Native American writing? And we just came down to the fact that it's an Indigenous person writing it.
Uh-huh.
That an Indigenous person writing poetry can write a haiku or a sonnet if they want to, or a free verse if they want to, or drum and chant if they want to. But I think that Indigenous writing means that an Indigenous person is doing it. So if an Indigenous person writes a grocery list or an especially good email, that still qualifies as Indigenous writing. Now, to be published as an Indigenous writer, I feel that there are some just genuine traits that we have in abundance, but they certainly help. And I think one of the things I see is innovation. Native people have always been early adopters, but also innovators, because we had to be. We had to respond to the weather. We had to respond to the conditions. You know, the soil's really good one year, so we plant some corn, and then it's not so good the next year, so we have to invent the Three Sisters method, squash, corn, and beans together. Well, that works in writing as well. We have to adapt. Like, for example, you know, we were talking about back in the day when poetry was published in books, volumes of dusty books that sat in the library somewhere. Well, that's not how it is now. We have to be innovative. Put that poem on TikTok, you know, post that poem on social media. Poetry journals are going digital, where many more people have access to them. So that innovation is a great trait that we have that helps us to become published writers and as published writers. Another thing that I see with Native writers that's so important, authenticity. Your truth is your truth. Your belief is your belief. And so often that's something that we stand on. We believe that at our core, right? We are resistant to people who try to take away our languages and traditions and assimilate us in a forced assimilation way now. You know, because that happened to our ancestors, we are now pushing back. And I think that in writing, we have to do the same thing. You will always come across an editor who, you know, can't you put some horses in this or some eagles in this? You know, or you'll come across an editor
that
says, oh, is that really a Native poem? Yes, because a Native person wrote it. And so we have to constantly remember to be authentic, our authentic selves. Otherwise, we become caricatures. And then the next trait I really think that Indigenous writers do have and have to have is transparency.
Mm-hmm.
We have to know that some things are sacred. They're not to be written. They're not to be discussed with the outside. We also know that some things are present. So we have to stay in the moment, and those things are for that moment. We don't need to write them for the ages so that any old body can read them and you know, pirate them. But we also have to be transparent. I think we have to say, this is how it is. This is what it is. This is how I see it. This is the way that I see it. And that is what makes us, I think, stunning, stunning writers and stunning storytellers. In our whole culture, we didn't have poetry as something that gatekeepers or academics controlled. Our lives were poetry. When you came back from an especially good hunt, you did a dance or you sang a song.
Right.
And that song was poetry. When you were desiring children, that's how Mother of Nations, my new book, comes about. Because when you desired a child, you were to create a song. And I can't say a lot more about that process because it's sacred, but I can just say that's exactly what I did. I just put it in a book. But I created my song to put out there so that our faithful creator could know that I was desiring a family. And so the idea that poetry is somehow separate, like poetry is very over there and lofty and academic and this way. We had it intertwined in every area of our lives. The storytellers who could keep you mesmerized for hours on a winter night with nothing but their voices. The chants and songs and all of those things that we've handed down that have lasted through generations. People remember those songs because of the cadences. I feel like poetry is something that Indigenous people have always done, always do, and must continue to do.
I agree. A beautiful thought. Yes. And so along those lines, you know, if there's a message in Mother of Nations, what is that message?
That is a wonderful question, and I think I'm going to answer it with this poem. It's called One Judge for Daniel. In the night seasons, the oceans cry and the stars collide. We know it's your time. In the night seasons, the prophets dance, raise their hands, see visions in trance. In the night seasons, the warriors chant, moon retreats. Dreams light in a slant. In the night seasons, the hunters come, haunt hollers and rivers and wait for the sun. Come morning, we all speak in tongues. I believe that the message of Mother of Nations is gorgeous and sacred in every area of life. That all of our life, from the beginning to the end and all the way around in between, is seeped in the Holy Spirit.
Yes, that is beautiful. A beautiful poem, beautiful words.
Thank you.
And a beautiful meaning. I'm so glad that you shared that because I was going to ask. Yes. So then, do you have plans to write another book? I mean, after this behemoth of a book that you've put together, I mean, It just, Mother of Nations must have taken so much out of you to compile all this life that you have and these thoughts, beautiful thoughts that you've just condensed into this one book. That's very heavy. I know there's a lot that you have put into this. It must have taken a lot out of you. But are you thinking of writing another book? And if you are, what sort of book? Will it be more poetry, historical fiction, maybe? What sort of book?
That's up to God. You know,
the
writing process that I have, you know, these poems came to me fully formed, most of them, in dreams, and I just took dictation. I just wrote it down. And so this book was literally a prayer. it was literally my offering to ask God to bless me with sons. And so I feel like it has been rewarded handsomely. I mean, I got my wish. The desire of my heart was granted. You know, this prayer was answered with yes. And so I don't necessarily know, honestly. What I know is okay. that when the Spirit gives me something to write, I do write it down. I know that I am obedient and I'm willing. But honestly, when I think about even this book, it was written from a place of please, please grant my heart's desire. And it's been granted. And so I honestly don't know what God will do next. All I do know about it is that every person on the earth is given some gift, some talent, some purpose, some destiny that shows how good God is and how much our Creator loves us. And so that's what I'm going to do. And that's what I'm going to teach my children to do. And that's what we're going to do. And if more books is part of that, then I'll do that.
Okay. That's a great answer. And what better answer could there be? You know? Yes, I'm glad that you're in tune spiritually on that level where you answered the call, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You're able to do that. You know, I think that a lot of people in the modern world have blinders on now, and they're not so open to receiving the divine and everything. Something I was thinking about was that some lyricists, some poets, they feel that poems and songs are like living creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And once they're released into the world, an author can no longer edit it, and there's little an author can do to rule over what they've created, you know, after it's been released, you know? So what's your take on that?
Well, I'm really fascinated by that, because I wonder how our ancestors would have answered that. You know, because these songs that we sing at ceremony, for example, they started ages ago. And yet every person is going to sing them a little bit differently, simply because they have a different voice, or a little slower, a little faster. But they'll still have power. They'll still have impact. And I think about the writers of the old church hymns, right? If I sat down and I wrote Amazing Grace, or I wrote Precious Lord, or I wrote, you know, some of the great bedrock songs of the church, every church will sing them differently. You know, they're going to be remixed in some way.
Right.
Just because people sing them differently. And so I guess my point of it is that I gave you what was in my heart at that moment. And the beauty of it is that every person will read it differently. Every person will put their heart into their reading of it. They will find the Creator meeting them in that poem where they are at that moment, what's happening to them in their lives. And so will everyone else. And that seems to me like a divine connection.
Yes, I agree. I agree. That's a great answer. So on that thought, what spiritual or therapeutic practices help you get in the right frame of mind to write? You know, I mean, we spoke about you being open to Creator's guidance for writing the things that you do. Is it always like that? Or do you hear the call and then you're like, okay, Creator, just I'm cooking right now. You know, so I will write after supper, you know, how do you go about that process? You know, is there anything, a spiritual practice that you incorporate into your writing process there?
I want to read this to you. It's called Quiverful, and it's from Mother of Nations, and it's exactly the answer to the question that you're asking. Poets owe no debt to sleep, Before you wed one, you should have known this. Now you're surprised by the songs of starlight, long before daybreak as dreams meet spirit. The measure of rest is a cruel transaction. I understand and soothe you, but God has things to do. Chronicle our lives, our tribes by starlight, streaming through windows across the page of the prophecies I keep by the bed for such a time as this. Poets often rhyme in shadows, our fingers writing lines that seem straight. Daystar shows them crooked as sticks in water. I compose by candles we waxed last summer, useless in any dark but this. Constellations teach us to number our days. On the nights when I must prophesy, every moonbeam matters. All the verbs are impressed into service. Those seasons, those times, we light fires. You roll over, anointed to love through meter. I believe that we have seasons in our lives. We're constantly creating. We're always creating. But I believe in seasons. And so I believe that there's seasons of prayer and poetry. There's seasons of ceremony and poetry. There's seasons of inspiration, life events that inspire poetry. And so my spiritual practice is to pray and to be open and available. But I also realize there are seasons. You know, when I had a newborn and was breastfeeding, I don't really think I wrote too much poetry. When I got a chance to sleep, I was asleep, you know. And so that was a season where my greatest creation was taking place. And I think that's important, especially for authors to remember, that you may write a fantastic poem, and then you may have to go do the dishes, or you may have to change a diaper, or you may have to go to work at your job so that your family has food. And those are just as great of creations as writing an award-winning poem. So my spiritual discipline practice is to pray and ask for instructions. What are we doing today? Holy Spirit, what are you blessing today? What are we doing today? And sometimes that's a poem, and sometimes that's giving birth to a person.
Right. Right. I understand exactly where you're coming from with that. And, you know, something I was thinking about as you were reading your beautiful poem is that you have such a beautiful speaking voice. Have you ever considered turning Mother of Nations into an audiobook?
That is the greatest idea I've heard all day.
I think it's great.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I will have to look into that. I really will. I would love to do that. I think it would be wonderful because we would reach people where they are. You know, I love it. What a great idea. I'm going to look into that because I think that's a marvelous idea. Thank you so much. Because people go through, again, seasons. When I had a newborn, if you gave me something to read, I was like, well, hope I get to read that someday. But now, the season is changing to where I can read a little bit. You know, I have a little more time or whatever. But sometimes the spoken voice, the spoken word, which is how our ancestors did everything,
right?
Right, what we need at that time. And I believe that Mother of Nations, there would be people that would enjoy hearing it. It would be soothing to them. It would be comfort and joy and uplift to them in an audio version. So thank you for that. What a great idea.
Oh, you're welcome, and I would benefit from this as well, because I would be able to, you know, I've read your book, of course, but I would be able to hear you speak, read your poems in your voice, you know, instead of the voice in my head as I read your books, you know?
I love that. That's wonderful. That's beautiful.
I think that's a great idea.
It is. Thank you.
So, did you celebrate after, you know, when you finally finished Mother of Nations and it was off to the publisher and everything was done on your end to complete that, you know, did you celebrate? And if you celebrated, how did you do that?
I sure did. I went to the hospital and had a baby.
Oh, okay. Well, like, the ultimate celebration.
Yeah. Like, I literally finished the last edits, and it went to the print. You know, the publisher signed off on it, and it went to the printer, and I went to the hospital and gave birth. Like, literally. Like,
wow.
Yeah, I was like, it was just a few days later, yeah. It was great. It was just wonderful.
Wow.
Yeah, so we had quite a celebration because my prayer was answered. I wrote it as a prayer, and the prayer was answered. And so it was a very short time. It was literally, like, at the publisher, and off I went to the hospital, and it came out that very week that my son was born.
Oh, that's amazing. I wasn't really cognizant of that time frame there.
Oh, yes. I was still, yeah, it was amazing. And it was an amazing thing because it was like giving birth. You're giving birth, and here's a great monument to that. Like, you know, people compare a lot of times writing a book or making a music project to having a baby because of all the work that goes into it and the waiting and the labor and the love and all of that. And that's really how it felt. It was almost like he came into the world and had a marker, a lasting marker of that. You know, this is a book. You have your own book, you know? I don't know. I mean, I would have loved
right.
to have fireworks, but, you know, a book of poetry is fine, too.
Well, you know, you just grew a human. You really, yeah. Someone should have thrown a parade for you. You know?
Well, a book's all right with me, because for the rest of his life, he will know. He will know that his mother loved him so much that she created this just for him.
That is beautiful. And I'm sure he will. I know he will. Yes, that's very, very beautiful and a fitting tribute to your son. So do you, something I've wanted to ask you also, do you listen to music when you write or when you're writing? Do you have to be in a quiet space? Do you listen to music, or is like the TV on in the background? What's that like for you?
Oh,
or does it vary?
Yeah, it really does. And I'm going to say this. I wish I was one of those people that could go into a quiet office and sit down and write a great poem. But nope. You know, it doesn't work like that for me. I need life. I need to sit by the river and write. I need the sound of the babies playing. And I need the wonderful crickets chirping, you know, and the fireflies lighting up and all of that. And even when I go to bed and dream a poem and wake up and write it down by moonlight, right, or dictate it into my phone so I can keep it, or write it on the back of a napkin. You know, one of the poems that's been anthologized several times, I wrote on the back of a napkin in Chili's in Albuquerque. And I think about how often life is what gives me inspiration. I sit in just a silent, quiet, you know, carol at the library, let's say. It's like, meh. Then I have to listen to music. I have to play some music in order to become inspired. But I become a lot more inspired taking a walk. You know, I have a wagon, and we go for a walk every day, and a lot of times the poems will just come to me during that walk because of something we see or something that, you know, God points out to me. And I think about how life inspires me. The people I meet inspire me. Events inspire me. Dances and ceremonies and powwows inspire me. So I would say my background music is usually real life.
Right. I think that's a great answer. Yeah, I've often said that I believe my life is written on the backs of napkins and receipts and a box somewhere. Because when I write and the inspiration hits me, it's like I will just grab whatever I can to write it down on. You know, it might be the back of a napkin, it might be a paper towel, or a receipt somewhere, you know, scrap piece of paper, and I will write down what's on my mind and this lyric or such. And, you know, and then it just kind of gets put on the side. And I realized one day I had this just box of a bunch of receipts and napkins and stuff that had poetry and lyrics written on them.
Yeah, isn't that interesting how our lives are, that is our life, right? That is. I mean, the things that we're doing, the receipts, the napkins, they're because we were living life at the moment. And then inspiration.
Right.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Right.
We have to take a quick commercial break and pay some bills, but when we come back, oh my goodness, Dwayne Brayboy, you need your own podcast. You are stunning. We will be right back after these messages.
And your girl been saver, better believe they get on their knees, they pray hard, they pray hard, and never look back, what's the world forgave you?
The hardest thing to do at times is to make changes in your routine. Don't let that hold you back.
Wait a minute! They told us we had it all, Jordan! Well, yeah, I guess in a way we are running out of all.
I'm Rhea. I'm Tia. And I'm Heather. And we are Three Voices.
You want this drama over here? It's clear. You got Gilbert over here. You got LeBron over here. And guess what? We talking about
it. I'm trying to get over the dog whistle politics thing because I can't hear it and dogs are supposed to hear it. So who hears the dog whistle?
Your opportunity is now to get up-to-the-minute information, great entertainment, and stimulating talk programs on your computer. Yes, I said your computer. Just log on to TalkTainmentRadio.com. Click Listen Live to hear a program. The blogs and podcasts are up and running. TalkTainmentRadio.com can also be heard on your cell phone.
Yes, I said cell phone.
TalkTainment Radio. We go where you go.
The COVID-19 vaccines can be our chance to get back to our plans, who we are, what we miss, to get back to each other, to life. But it's okay to have questions, like, how were the vaccines tested? In rigorous clinical trials among adults of diverse backgrounds, can the vaccines give you COVID-19? You cannot get COVID-19 from a vaccine. Why should I get vaccinated? Protecting yourself also helps protect the people around you. Find the latest information at getvaccineanswers.org.
Here's an idea. You've heard of the notion of pay it forward. It comes from the 2000 movie, Pay It Forward. Basically, the premise is helping someone with no expectations of payback, providing assistance to someone, passing information on, simply doing a good deed for a total stranger, and instead of allowing them to pay it back, ask them to pay it forward. Doing favors for other people and asking them to do the same. The principle is the same as multi-level marketing, except that instead of soap or vitamins, it's generosity between strangers that is being passed on. Pay It Forward is mentoring. It's volunteering in your community. It's shoveling a neighbor's snow or cutting an elderly person's grass for them or taking a senior to the store. Don't wait for someone else to do something good. Do it yourself. It starts with you. Talktainment Radio strongly embraces the notion of pay it forward. In fact, we just did.
Your daughter doesn't want to talk about why her room is a horrible mess. Your son doesn't want to talk about why he's wearing mismatching socks. Your spouse doesn't want to talk about their bad haircut. Families don't have to talk about everything, but they should talk to plan for an emergency. Pack basic supplies in a go bag, water, canned food, flashlights, batteries, medical supplies, IDs, and some cash. Talk about where you'll meet in case you lose one another. And of course, don't forget to pack the dog treats. Talk to your family and make an emergency plan. Go to nyc.gov/readyny or call 311 to make your family's emergency plan. Brought to you by New York City Emergency Management and the Ad Council.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, They don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's gonna freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year. And a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with those scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Extinction is forever. To save America's most iconic and imperiled species from extinction, we must fight for their future. Fight to save the natural lands that wildlife call home. Fight to limit pollution. Fight for smart development. Fight for their future. And fight for ours. For so goes nature, so goes us.
Unlike other health concerns, mental illness is not always easy to see.
D-E-P-R.
Mental illness doesn't show up on a scale.
Bipolar?
Sorting out a mental health concern takes professional diagnosis and treatment.
Anxiety. I thought so.
If you or a loved one has a mental health concern, don't go it alone. For 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP. Learn more at samhsa.gov/support.
Peace Corps. Life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or visit peacecorps.gov.
We are truly enjoying our visit with Dwayne Brayboy. We love you so much, and we appreciate you so much. And we're visiting about my new book, Mother of Nations. And you can get a copy, and you will enjoy it, I'm sure. www.utteredchaos.org or Amazon.com, whichever is easier. And I hope that you will buy this book and that you will enjoy this book. And I want to say that the proceeds from this book do go to charity and to help us continue to lift up Indigenous voices. Dwayne Brayboy, you're doing a magnificent job, so I'm going to hand the mic back to you.
Oh, well, thank you very much. So what charities do the proceeds go to? I wasn't aware of that.
Well, I am the director of a nonprofit called Wells of Victory, and we empower people of the Southeast Native tribes, and we educate non-natives about our wonderful qualities and contributions. And so this show is an outgrowth of that nonprofit. Our music, we produce the music, and we've just been so blessed that it's a labor of love, but it is the winner. Our music has won the Native American Music Award, Global Music Award, Fair Play Country Music Award, the Indigenous Music Award nominee, so many great things. And we produced our music, The Stars of Heaven and The Desire of Nations. These books, you know, help to fund those kinds of projects, including this show. So we have presentations, We write curriculum, we make curriculum available, like worksheets for homeschoolers, for example, curriculum lessons, and we're able to do that free of charge because people buy the books and buy the music and support our nonprofit. As you know, my speaking engagements now mostly are on Zoom, but many universities and colleges and schools and churches and organizations, I mean, I spent most of my life traveling and sharing our culture and educating people about it. And all that is made possible because people buy our books and music.
That is beautiful. I wasn't aware of that. Not all of those details. That's such a good thing and a great thing to do. And I'm not at all surprised that this is something that you've been involved in. You know, this is just one of the many ways that you make the world a beautiful place.
Mm, thank you so much. I'm so blessed because we're 501c3, so all donations and everything are tax deductible, and we get to do some wonderful things. I mean, just cultural preservation, language immersion. We do some wonderful, wonderful things, and I feel privileged to get to do that. My granddaddy used to say, if you're going to be part of this family, you better be pretty or you better be useful.
Right. Very, very nice. More wisdom from your wonderful family. I love to hear your family's wisdom.
They're fun. They're also very wise. They are a lot of fun, but they're also very wise. So I'm thankful.
Most definitely. Okay, here's something that I thought about asking you. And if any of your poems could be turned into a movie, which would you choose?
Oh, well, you know, that has actually happened. We have a we have a short film that is just wonderful, really. It's an animated version of the Southeast Tribes on the Trail of Tears, right? And so one of the brilliant and great things about that film, it was made with students from the Art Center Design College, and The Boundary of Moab is the name of the poem, and I'm actually reading the poem, and I appear animated briefly in the short film. And that is one of my poems that was turned into a really beautiful animated film, and it's award-winning. That's what's amazing to me, is that people respond to it. We won awards at the Cherokee Nation Film Festival and just, many, many festivals across Canada and the United States, the Torino Film Festival in Italy, several film festivals in India. And that let me know that the experience of Indian removal and Indigenous people's history in the Southeast Tribes was universal. Like, people all over the world could truly relate to this. And they were feeling it. They were, they understood it, you know, they got it. And so we have had the privilege of that. And then there's two other videos, The Miracle of Us and Trail of Tears, which started off as poems. I turned them into songs, which I performed. Other artists like Night Shield and Mr. Futuristic and Cloudwalker got on the tracks with us, and they were made into short films. So those are, those are amazing. That's amazing to me. I just sit there and I feel like, wow, so humbled. But what I see once and for all is that there's no distinction between the art form, right? Like, it's all storytelling. It's all expressing the desires of our hearts. And so sometimes we'll use poems, and sometimes we'll use songs, and sometimes we'll use film, and sometimes we'll use whatever comes next.
Yes, and I do agree with you that the Indian Removal Act, the Cherokees being removed to Oklahoma, Indian territory, that story, that tragic event, does resonate with people far and wide, and more people know about that than I ever knew. You know,
right.
My sister-in-law is Filipino,
mm-hmm.
and I was speaking with her mother, and they're just wonderful people, wonderful people. I just love them so much. They remind me of our people, just family, you know, and
mm-hmm.
she was aware of the Cherokee Trail of Tears.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, she knew all about that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's
beautiful. And she's, you know, born and raised, educated in the Philippines. You know,
mm-hmm.
she's not Filipino-American. You know, she's Filipino. And she was fully aware of the Cherokee Trail of Tears and all. And that really impressed me that knowledge has been shared that far and wide.
Yes. And I would love to take just, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I just want to say to everyone that you can find me on YouTube and see these short films. My short film, The Worship of Angels, is the award-winning animated short film about the Trail of Tears, which didn't just affect the Cherokees. It affected the Choctaw, Chickasaw, the Creeks, the Seminoles also, and also some of the other tribes that we don't often mention. And even people who weren't removed were affected by it because they had to hide or stay behind or try to assimilate, right, in order to survive Indian removal. And also several of my other poems have been turned into videos as well. The Stars of Heaven, Beautiful Warriors, The Miracle of Us, and Trail of Tears all have short film videos that are available on YouTube. So if you just go to Dawn Karima, you will see these amazing pieces. And I've had some great collaborators over the years, and I am so thankful.
Yes, that was where I was going next, is where can we find these, you know? So mm-hmm. now I'm glad that we know. I think everyone will want to go see these. And you know, about the removal, mm-hmm. Of course, there are other nations involved. And I will say that at least one of our people, Tuscarora people, were in Cherokee at the time when the removal happened.
Wow.
And ended up getting, it was a couple, and the mother gave birth to her child in a stockade.
Oh my goodness.
And they were removed west to Oklahoma, and then after they arrived in Oklahoma, they made their way back to North Carolina.
Oh my goodness. Every story is a family story, isn't it? I mean, when I think about, that's how I describe my writing, is that it's all family stories. If you read my novels, The Way We Make Sense, that's the North Carolina side. And if you read The Marriage of Saints, my second novel, it's part of the American Indian Studies in the University of Oklahoma series, it's the Oklahoma side. And they're just family stories. They're just stories I heard from my loved ones and friends and what happened and how it happened. And that's something I want to make sure we encourage our listeners. You know, this isn't something that you have to be privileged to do. Somebody doesn't have to give you permission to do it. If you have family stories, if you want to write poems, if you want to compose songs, you do that. You tell your story. You tell the stories that matter to you. You tell the stories of your friends and neighbors, because that's really all it is. We can call it lofty things like literary fiction or poetry or journalism or creative nonfiction. But in the end, all it is the story of us.
Right. The Story of Us, which is one of your titles.
Yeah, it is. Because that all boils down to something my granddaddy told me one day. He told me that this is all you're doing is telling the story of us. You tell the story of us. You tell the story of us. And I really want to make sure that our young people know that your story is important. Your story matters. You know, I'm a reservation housewife, really. I mean, you know, I'm a stay-at-home mom. But my story matters. Your story matters. Your story matters. Your friend's story matters. Our stories matter. All of them matter. Because in the end of days, that's all that's going to be left of us. When we travel on and we join the Creator, we go to heaven, our stories will be how our progeny and seven generations will know us. I talk about my granddaddy a lot. I quote him a lot because I miss him. But one of the main reasons I started quoting him was because I realized his wisdom was helping people, but also because I wanted to make sure that my nephews and my children knew him. They can't know him maybe in the flesh, but I quote him to them. I quote him on social media. Yeah, so many times what he said was exactly right on. And so that's how we stay alive. No one has ever really gone as long as people remember their story.
That is beautiful, and it's very accurate. It's very accurate. Yes. I want to ask you if you would, one of those stories, the poems that were turned into the films, if you would read one of those, would you share that with us?
Oh, that is wonderful. Oh, my goodness. Now, I do want to put this out there into the universe. Also, there is a section called Muskogee Milk and Honey, and it's about an Indian doctor. And I would love to see someone make a real movie, like, you know, a real Lifetime movie or a real, you know, Netflix movie or a real, you know, Hulu, Amazon Prime or whatever movie about Bertie Marvelous and her terrific husband. I want to read this piece because I had the joy of seeing it performed, and it really, oh, my goodness, it became one of those videos. And it took on a whole new life of its own. It showed a tribal psalm. Songs echo in the air, memories in mountains, told again in thunder, in drum beats and dance. Dancers are our poetry. Warriors are our art. We hold our history in hawk and macaw feathers. The trail of tears wounded us in the house of our friends. It showed of faces tilted toward the whirlwind, waiting for spirit to do us justice. Come, Creator, hear and help. We call you most ancient of drums. And that piece was turned into a video called The Miracle of Us. And you can see that on YouTube. And it is a beautiful video that was made by a terrific director. And many of our friends and loved ones volunteer their time to appear in it and to dance in it. And I'm so grateful. And I want to close this beautiful conversation with a poem called Fruit of the Womb. And it's the poem that started the whole thing. It came to me after being in prayer and asking God to give me a family of my own. And for all of you whose hearts are breaking, for all of you who are praying and believing God for something, for all of you who need a change or want a change or want something better or different, here you go. Fruit of the womb. Each stomp, each step reveals the precious fruit of the sun, honors the precious things of the moon, secretly brought in our thoughts. Our sleep flees. Until we call on the one who will answer. Rise and tie shakers of earth and turtle heartbeats. Shake shells under songs. Each stomp, each step reveals Creator sitting on the circle of the world. We call him with tongues of fire. When he answers, the fruit of the womb is ours. Thank you, Dwayne Brayboy, for joining us today and for helping me to share about Mother of Nations, my new book. You can find that at Amazon. It's poems by Dawn Karima. It's called Mother of Nations. The author is Dawn Karima, K-A-R-I-M-A, M as in Mary. And it's at utteredchaos.org. That's the publishing press. Or you can get a copy from Amazon.com. And I hope that you will and that you'll enjoy it. We love you, Dwayne Brayboy. Thank you so much for helping us today.
And I love you all, too. And it's really an honor to be here. And thank you for allowing Creator to manifest this beautiful work of poetry through you.
Thank you so much. And I'm so grateful. And I want to thank our faithful Creator for manifesting not just this book, but the wonderful baby for whom this book was dedicated. And I'm so thankful that all of you joined us today. Thank you very much. We appreciate our sponsors. We appreciate this network. We appreciate Dwayne Brayboy. And we appreciate all of you who listen. I'm Dr. Dawn Karima, and I'll see you next time.
Come and save her. Let her believe it. Get on her knees and pray her. Then pray her. And never look back once the world forgave you. She is silent. She's gay.
Lord, can you come and save her? Let her believe it, get on her knees and pray her. Then pray her and never look back once the world forgave.
You've got the power. The world's greatest radio. Talktainmentradio.com.